Okay, good morning everyone. Yashikar, those who were able to make it this past Monday night, and I would just say that I actually missed giving the share the last two Sunday. Even though I did have a good excuse and I was tied up, but there was something missing on Sunday morning, I must say. Alright, so today I'd like to speak about a topic that often gets mentioned, but we don't know so much about it. And that is the topic of Ayin Hara, or Ayin Hara, as it's commonly pronounced. And Ayin Hara, I will allow myself the luxury of mispronouncing it in the same way that everyone else mispronounces it. If you want to be a stickler for the language, it's Ayin Hara. Okay, but everyone says Ayin Hara, Gli Ayin Hara, Ken Ayin Hara, whatever it is, so we'll just say it that way. Okay, so what does Ayin Hara have to do with Parshas Vayechi? So it is actually very much connected to the parasha. We find two places in the parasha with this reference to Ayin Hara. Okay, we have taking the, let's go with the second pasuk first on page one. Okay, we have the famous pasuk Hamala Kazol Osimi Kol Ra Yivarach Atan Orim Yaakov Avinu gave the bracha to Menashe and Ephraim. And he said that the Malach should Yivarach Atan Orim should bless the youth, these young men, Yikari Behem Shmi B'Shem Avosai Avraham Yisod V'Yidgu L'Rov B'Kerav Ha'aretz. The Yidgu L'Rov B'Kerav Ha'aretz is translated to mean that they should multiply in great number in the Kerav Ha'aretz, in the midst of the land. The word V'Yidgu is the same root as the word dog. The word dog in Hebrew means a fish. So Rashi tells us that what does it mean, V'Yidgu L'Rov B'Kerav Ha'aretz? So one of the interpretations is, says Rashi on the bottom line of the second column, Rashi says, Kedogim halalu sheparim v'rovim, like the fish that multiply, the ein ayin hara sholetis v'hem. And ayin hara does not rule over them. In other words, fish apparently are immune to ayin hara. From this we could infer that other animals even are not immune. Things that are visible on the earth are not immune to ayin hara. However, here we would have the special designation of fish, that fish are protected from ayin hara. And the reason for that is apparently because they are covered over, right? It doesn't say that clearly here, but we'll see that somewhere else, that fish are immune. And this was the bracha that Yaakov Avinu gave to Menashe and Ephraim, the Yidgul Arov, the Kerev Ha'aretz, that they should multiply at like fish and not be susceptible to ayin hara. Okay, another connection that we have in the parasha is somewhat later, the bracha that was given to Yosef. So the pasuk says, Bein Paras Yosef, Bein Paras Yosef, this is on the top of page one, Bein Paras Yosef, Rashi says, means that Yosef is a son of Chen. Yosef has a lot of charm, that's the way it's translated in the Arsical Flemish, that Yosef is a charming son, Bein Paras Ale Oyin, that he is a charming son, Ale Oyin. Ale Oyin literally means on the eye. So Rashi explains what this means is that his charm reaches the eye of everyone that observes him. Anyone that sees him is taken by Yosef's charm. And the pasuk concludes by saying, Bonos Tzad Alishur. Bonos Tzad Alishur, Rashi interprets to mean that the women of Mitzrayim used to climb the walls to get a glimpse of Yosef. Yosef was so handsome that when there would be a royal parade, so the women would, you know, they would clamor to get a look at him. It was such an incredible sight to see such a handsome person, that this is where Rashi explains the puzzle. Banos Tzad Ali Shur. So what does this have to do with Ayin Hara? So this pasuk is not clear what it has to do with it. The first pasuk Rashi tells us. But if you turn over to page 2, we have a remarkable Gemara in the Sefer Brachos. This Gemara is actually found in several places in the Shas with a slight variation, which we'll mention in a moment. And the Gemara says the following thing. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan, who was one of the great Amoraim, one of the great authorities who's mentioned in the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan was also an exceptionally handsome person. And it says that Rabbi Yochanan have a rogil to have a ka'azul liyosef ashari to tzvila. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan would sit outside of the mikvot. Rabbi Yochanan lived in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yochanan was the editor of the Talmud Yerushalmi. And Rabbi Yochanan would sit outside the mikvot. And when at night, when the women were going into the mikvot, to the mikvot for tefillah, Rabbi Yochanan would sit on the outside of the mikvot on a bench. So Omar said, yes, and what kind of strange thing is that? So he says, Kisalkan Benos Yisroel Va'ashin Mitzvilah, that he said, the reason I'm doing this is because when the women come out of the tefillah and they exit from the mikvah and they're on their way home, Mistaklum be, so they will see me, Vinehavi Luhu Zara the Shapiri Kavase, and they will have children who are just as good as I am. Elsewhere in the Gemara, this Gemara is also mentioned in Bava Metzia with a slight variation. The Gemara there in Bava Metzia says that they will have children who are as good looking as me and as learned as I am. And this is based on the mystical belief that we have. There are riots to this, there are proofs to this concept in several places in the Torah, that the thought that goes through the mind of a parent when conceiving a child has an impact on the child. This is a mystical or Kabbalistic notion that is seen in several places. You see this, without going into detail, maybe that's a discussion of itself, but you see this in several places in the Chumash and in the Chazal. You see even a similar idea when Yaakov Avinu wanted to have, when he was breaking away from Laban, and he wanted to have, and he said to Laban, you know, just to prove my honesty, I'm only going to take the sheep that have these unusually bizarre stripes, etc. So how did he go ahead and do it? So it says that the Torah tells us in Parashas Vayetzeh that he put strips of wood by the well where the sheep would come before they would mate. And apparently they would see those things and it would impact on the child that was born, that the child would come out striped. So we find this concept in various places as maybe a Kabbalistic idea. But nonetheless, Rabbi Yochanan said that therefore I'm doing a public service. It sounds strange to us, but this is what he said. That I'm going to sit there and they're going to see me, and now the next generation of Jews are going to be very handsome, very good looking, and also very learned. This is what he did. So the Gemara continues and says, Amrulei Rabbanan, so the rabbi said to him, well, Kamistafi Mar Me'ain Abisha. They said, but aren't you afraid of an Ayin Hara? I mean, you're sitting there and people are going to look at you and say, wow, look at him, look at him, what an incredible, what an amazing person the Gelman is. They're going to give you an Ayin Hara. Why are you worried about that? On Maluhu, Sir Rabbi Yochanan said, Ano Mizara Di Yosef Koasina. That I am a descendant of the family of Yosef. And the family of Yosef, the Loshal today ain't a Bisha. The family of Yosef is immune to Ayin Hara. How is that? It exists. Because it says in the Pasuk, Bain Korah Yosef, the Pasuk that we just referred to, that Yosef is a charming son. Bain Korah Ole Ayin, that he is charming to the eye. For Amar Rabbi Avol, so Rabbi Avol came and said a drush on this Pasuk. And he said, Al Tikre Ale Ayin, Ela Ole Ayin. That the puzzle should be interpreted to mean that Yosef is a charming son that over, not Ale Ayin, that comes to the eye, but Ole Ayin, that exceeds the eye, that overcomes the eye. Meaning the eye could potentially damage Yosef. The Ayin Hara could potentially damage Yosef. But he is Bein Korah Ole Ayin. He is given the special blessing that he overcomes. He can overcome the eye. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan said, since I am a descendant of Yosef, I don't have to worry about Ayin Hara. This is what he said. The Gemara says another way to know that the children of Yosef are immune. The Gemara continues and says, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Amar Mehocha. They said, you see it from a different pasuk, which was the first one that we cited. B'yidgul arov v'kerav ha'aretz. that Yosef's children, Menashe and Ephraim, were given the bracha that they should yidgul or rov, they were compared to the fish. Says the Gemara, Ma dagim shebiyom, mayim nechatzim aleihem. Just like the fish in the ocean are covered by water, the ein ayin hara shall let us lahem. And because they are covered by water, they are immune to ayin hara. So here we see something that Rashi didn't mention. That the reason why they're immune to the ayin hara is because hamayim mechashim aleihem, because the water covers over them. You can't see them. They're not visible. You don't see the fish. You look at the ocean, you see the vast ocean, you see people go fishing, they know, you know there are fish there, but you can't see them.
What's troubling is that, should the woman be thinking of the good looks of Yochanan when she's with her husband?
Okay, so that's a good question. That's a good question, but it's not the easiest Gemara to understand, I agree, but the fact is, the challenge thing was, but you're incurring an ayin hara, to which he said that, well, I'm not worried because I have this connection to Yosef. And the second proof is, the Gemara says, because the yidgu arov, they were compared to the fish, they're immune to ayin hara, azaro shel Yosef ein ayin hara sholetes lahem. So too, the children of Yosef are immune to ayin hara. The ibadis ema. And then the Gemara says another explanation. And the Gemara says another reason why I am immune to ayin hara is because I come from Yosef, is that ayin shelo ratzisa lozo mimasha eino shelo ein ayin hara sholetes bo. That an eye that is not interested in taking something which it is not entitled to is immune to ayin hara. Which means that Yosef, we know, we have the famous incident that God Yosef, his title, Yosef HaTzadik, that Yosef was called a tzadik because he was confronted with the great temptation of the wife of Potiphar, and he was able to overcome that, and essentially, overcoming that was because of the fact that this is not his wife. This, in other words, what was the driving force? The driving force is, this is someone else's wife. This is not mine. I have no right to this. Says the Gemara that as such an eye that has that attitude that I don't want to take from somebody else is immune, something which is not mine is immune to ayin hara. So here we have the story of Rabbi Yochanan and thus the connection to Parshas Vayechi that we have the two references to ayin hara. Okay, so now as far as what is ayin hara, what exactly is it? So we don't know exactly yet, right? We just have these references to the fact that the children of Yosef were immune to it because of the two psukim that we cited. So now we come to the Gemara, if you turn it now please to page 3. We come to the Gemara in Bav Mesia on Daf Kuf Zayin. And the Gemara in Bav Mesia, Daf Kuf Zayin, very, very remarkable Gemara, which is really, I think, the only Gemara that speaks directly about the workings of ayin hara. So the Gemara says as follows, and I'm sorry here it's not marked off on the page, but if you look, there's an asterisk about two-thirds of the way down in the column of the Gemara, and the Gemara quotes Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, Osur lo la'adam sheyamod al shtei chavero. It is prohibited for a person to stand by his friend's field when his friend's field is filled with crops, in the season that the crops are growing, and you go past the field and you see the field is a large field and it's filled with crops, so the Gemara says a person is not allowed to stand there at that time. If it's not your field, you're not supposed to stand there. This is the Gemara's quote in the Shulchan Aruch, that at such a time, you're not supposed to be by a friend's field. Why not? Says Rashi, because of the fact that standing there will give this person an ayin hara, will give him an ayin hara, and will potentially damage his field. This is what the Gemara tells us. In other words, you drive by these, you know, if you see sometimes a field when it's laden with the, whatever it is that grows there, so it's a very impressive sight. So to stand there at that time and to gaze upon it is prohibited by the Chazal because of the fact that it could cause a person to, out of envy, to say, wow, look at what this guy has, unbelievable, and we'll give him an ayin hara. To which the Gemara continues and says, Amy, the Gemara challenges and says, what do you mean? But we find, just to be brief, we'll skip a little bit here, the Gemara quotes two lines down, the Gemara says, there's a pasuk that says, Baruch Atah Ba'ir, Baruch Atah Ba'Sadeh, right? We have the pasuk in the brachos that we find in Parshas Kisavo, prior to the Tochacha, right? So we have brachos, Baruch Atah Ba'ir, you'll be blessed in the city, Baruch Atah Ba'Sadeh, if you keep the mitzvahs, you'll be blessed in the city, you'll be blessed in the field. What does it mean, you'll be blessed in these places? Says the Gemara, that the Amr Le Hachi Amr Rav Baruch Atah Ba'ir. What does it mean? You'll be blessed in the city. Sheyehebeis Chasamuk LeBeis HaKnesset. That you'll have your house will be near a Beis HaKnesset. Baruch Atah Ba'Sadeh. And what does it mean? You'll be blessed in the field. Sheyehei Nichasecha Krovim La'ir. That your possessions will be close to the city. Meaning you won't have a hard commute to work. Right, that's really good. Baruch Atah Ba'Sadeh, you'll be blessed in the field that you'll have. Your fields will be close to the city, so that when you have to go and see what's needed and take tend to your field, you'll be right there. This is what the Gemara interprets the puzzle, Baruch Atah Ba'Sadeh. So the question is that hey, you're telling me that a person should not stand by his friend's field lest they should come an ayin hara on the field. And now you're telling me that it's a good thing to have your field near the city. How could that be? But having a field near the city should be a bad thing, because if it's near the city, people are passing by and they see, oh look, here's his field. People walking on the outskirts of the city look out, and the first thing they see is this fellow's field, in which case it should result in ayin hara. So the Gemara continues and says, and we skip now to the next column of the Gemara, which is on the bottom of this page. The Gemara says, lo kasha. The Gemara says this is not a difficulty, because Hada Mahadalei Shura Verisko, Hada Lo Mahadalei Shura Verisko. Says the Gemara that the way to resolve this is that in the case where it's a bracha, that is where he has a fence that is not see-through, a solid wall fence around the field, so then he has the convenience of having his property near the city, and at the same time, it's not susceptible to ayin hara. However, if it's not that way, then it's not a bracha at all. Okay? So here we see an idea, halachic aspect of ayin hara. So now the Gemara continues and said one of the most remarkable things you'll ever see in the shop. The Gemara continues and says the following. The Gemara quotes a pasuk which says, in that same section, that Hashem tells the Jewish people that if you keep the mitzvahs, you will receive many brachas. Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them, this is his last speech to the Klal Yisrael, in Sefer Devarim, you will receive many brachas. One of the brachas were, the pasuk says, the Hezir Hashem in God Kol Choli, that Hashem will take away from you Kol Choli, all illness. All illness will be taken away from you. What does it mean? What is this pasuk a reference to? So the Gemara makes a remarkable interpretation. Amar Rav, zu ayin. Rav says this means the eye, that you will be protected from ayin hara. That's what it means. Hashem will take away all sin, as we would say. What do you mean? It means Hashem will take away all the illnesses. So I don't think the Gemara is disputing that, but the Gemara is saying that the word kol choli, Rashi explains, means that Hashem will take away Rashi explains that what it means, Hashem will take away the thing that causes kol choli. In other words, Hashem will take away the one thing which causes all disease. What causes all disease? Says the Gemara, ayin hara. And the Gemara proves this as follows, Rav L'Tanei. The Gemara says this is Rav's opinion that we find the Rav Solis Lebe Kivri. Says the Gemara that Rav went into a cemetery and apparently he was on a high madrega and he knew that he could stand by a grave and determine the cause of death of each person. That he could find out why was it that each person passed away. So Rav walked around the cemetery, Ovid Maida Ovid, the Gemara refers to euphemistically that he did what he did, meaning that he had some way of determining this, some mystical way of determining this. Omar, and he said, Tishin the Tisha, the Ayin Ra, the Echad the Derech Eretz. Rav said, 99% of the people buried here died from Ayin Ra. 1% died from natural means. Unbelievable. This is what the Gemara says. 99% died from ayin hara, and 1 died from natural means. So what is it supposed to mean? So apparently, you see from this, that the power of ayin hara, which we speak about, we hear all these expressions, and we say, what does it mean? It seems from the Gemara that the cause of that it could be cause of danger, it could be cause of harm to a person's possession, and it could be cause of a person's death. Rav says 99% of the people. So what is this supposed to mean? Okay, what kind of thing is that? What do you mean? If you would ask the coroner, right, if you would go read the doctor's report, they'll say, no, this one had this disease, and this one had a heart attack, and this one had... So what are you telling me that 99% died from ayin hara? So the Chazon Ish, it's not here on the sheet, but the Chazon Ish explains in his, in his sefer on Chosh Mishpat, an interesting thing, the Chazon Ish says that the pshat in this is that the way, in other words, it was decreed in heaven that the person should pass away. And it was decreed in heaven that the person should pass away in that year or whatever it is. But what triggered the illness in this person, it's true the person died from an illness. So they asked the doctor why the person died. I say, well, he had a very deadly disease. But what brought it about, how did it come about that this person was afflicted with this? It's because someone gave him, somewhere along the line, someone gave him an ayin hara. That somebody looked at this person the wrong way, and somebody said, you know, that somebody was envious of this person, the things that he had, and therefore that triggered the natural teva of what happened. This is the way the Chazon Ish explains to the Gemara. So therefore, it doesn't mean that someone gave him ayin hara and he dropped to the floor immediately. That's obviously not true. But rather, what it means is that the power of the ayin hara is such that it could have this effect, that it could have such an effect, that whatever came about, the thing that triggered it was the ayin hara. How do we understand this? What kind of crazy thing, especially in today's world of medicine, and we have so much knowledge, how could it be such a thing? What is this concept of ayin hara? So the explanation that's given, the explanation that's the easiest to work with, there's various explanations, mystical explanations, but the one that's the easiest to deal with is mentioned by Rav Eliyahu Dessler in the Sefer Misa Me'eliyahu. It's widely quoted, and that is that he says that when a person causes someone else to be envious of what he has, so what happens is that in itself is a sin, because we know the Torah says, well, Sachmol, you're not supposed to desire what somebody else has, and it's a very difficult mitzvah to fulfill. Very, very difficult mitzvah to fulfill. But it's made all the more difficult by the fact that the person who was blessed with all these wonderful things, flaunts it. That the person who has these things goes ahead and flaunts it. So when such a thing takes place, so then you're causing me to be envious. I have a hard enough time not being envious. Stop! Without any prodding from you. But now that you go ahead and you're showing me all that you have, and now you're bringing to light that you have it and I don't, so that creates somehow, that creates a, in heaven, that creates in Shemayim, a reassessment. In other words, a person is given a gift by Hashem, whether it's health or wealth or good family or talent or whatever it is. So that means it was decided in heaven that the person should have this talent. This is what it tells us another place, right? That is nishma min hashamayim. This person should have this talent. But the fact is that when the person abuses that talent, or abuses that gift, by making someone else envious of it, so that causes in the heavenly court a reassessment. In other words, given the fact that this is the way the person is reacting to this gift, given the way the person is wanting this gift, now does that person deserve it? Now does that person, it causes a reevaluation, and apparently not just a reevaluation of the gift itself, but perhaps even a reevaluation of whether the person deserves to even live. In other words, to go ahead, the first case that we had in the Gemara Bava Metzia of Ayin Hara, where you're not supposed to stand by a friend's field and gaze upon his financial success, so that, why not? Because that could cause that the crops will die, the crops will go dead. So that's because it was reassessed, and now he doesn't deserve it anymore. But it could even extend. It could even extend to the fact that that a person's whole life could be assessed. That this is the way the person goes around doing things. This is the way you go ahead and show off. You go ahead and flaunt what you have. This is considered by the Torah a terrible thing. And as such, this results in the Ayin Hara factor, which Rav said is the trigger of 90, in his time at least, I don't know today, but it's probably the same thing, that is 99% of all the tragedies that happen in the world are caused by this. And if you want to see an incredible thing, especially to the spider here, okay, so we have on page 4, the bottom of page 4, there's a Sefer Halichos Mussar, which is from Rav Avadi Yosef, so listen to me well, and he writes the following story from Rav Chaim Palagi. Rav Chaim Palagi, one of the great Sephardic Gedolim, who I believe was the author of Tapa Chaim. Somebody agree with that? Anybody? An agreement? Okay, I think so. Right, that he, Rav Chaim Palagi, very, very great Sephardic authority. And he said the following thing, Rav Chaim Palagi, now, maybe he'll say this is because Sephardim take this to a level past where Ashkenazim take it, but he said that when a Rav gets up in a shul to give a drasha, he should come give the drasha with a talus over his head. With a talus over his head, covering his face. Why? So he said an amazing thing. If we would see this, but you know, we don't. Sometimes you see by a Shabbos Hagadol or a Shabbos Shuvah. Sometimes the custom some rabbanim have that they put on a talus in honor of the tzibur. But that he should put the talus over his head, that we haven't seen. So he said, Shelo yaziku hadibrei de'ayin hara. He says that this is the rabbi, the rav, should cover his face so that he should not be damaged by ayin hara. Because people are going to be so impressed. Look at these great Kedushei Torah that this person is saying. Look at this brilliance that this person has, and that could result also in Ayin Hara. Apparently, you'll say, well, is he wanting it? Is the rabbi not wanting it? The rabbi is just making a presentation. But the fact is that apparently the line of Ayin Hara is so delicate that he said, in his opinion, this is what a person should do. And then he takes it a step further and says that the last four lines, the Sefer Shom al-Fasno Shurav Moshe HaKohen, he said over a story about a Sephardic Jew whose name was Rav Moshe HaKohen. We don't know who that is, but he tells the story, Rav Chaim Palagi tells the story, that this Rav Moshe HaKohen was an amazingly talented person, that he had a beautiful voice, And he had tremendous stamina. And on the Yom HaNaroim, when it came Rosh Hashanah, he got up and he davened all the tefillahs, shachris and mutzav, and blew the shofar. And everybody, which is quite a feat to do such a thing. He davened, and he had an exceptionally beautiful voice, and he blew perfect tekiyahs. Nobody, they didn't have to blow anything over. Nobody, you know, people weren't standing there squirming while he was struggling to get out the kolos. He blew beautiful shofar, and he did a fantastic job. And it says, and then got up on Yom Kippur, and on Yom Kippur he davened all the tefillahs. Shachris, Musaf, Mincha Nila, he went straight through with his beautiful voice, power, and everybody was astounded by his incredible gifts, his incredible talent. Umiyad Lacha Yom Kippur, Chola B'meshach Yomayim, and he passed away. As he says over the story, that after Yom Kippur, this person met an untimely death. So, and Rav Chaim Palagi, this great Sephardic Rav, says, the Cholzeh Machnas Ayin Hara Shenigram Al Yidei HaTzibur Shelo B'Kavanah. That it was not even with malice. In other words, Ayin Hara does not have to be, what he's bringing out from these stories, Rav Adi Yosef, what he's trying to bring out, is that it's not just when it's done with malice. In other words, there's two types of flaunting. Right? A person can flaunt a gift with the intention that I'm going to pop your eyes out. Right, I'm gonna make a party like you've never seen before. I'm gonna go ahead and come in to shul dressed to kill. You know, so the expression "dress to kill" now takes on a new meaning because the man dress to kill yourself. But the fact is that this is the attitude that of a person who does ayin hara with malice. But here, the person who was davening before the Amid, one would have to think, was not doing it with that intention. But nevertheless, the fact that he was putting his great skill and his great talent on display made it that he should be susceptible to ayin hara, and as such he met this terrible demise. So this is the concept of ayin hara that we have, and this concept manifests itself essentially in a person's conduct, but it also manifests itself in halacha, in a limited manner in halacha. And there's just a few that come to mind, halachas that we mentioned already, the idea that a person should not stand and in front of someone else's great financial success and stare at it. In other words, a person has this great field that's filled with crops. You should not, the Gemara says, also Adam is prohibited for a person should stand there. And so too, that would apply in any case where a person has on display their great success or their great wealth. For other people, they should know that you should, this is not the time to go look at it. Don't focus on it. Walk away. Don't pay attention to it. If you happen to see that somebody has a very good thing that came to them, just walk away. You may want to compliment them and wish them well that they should enjoy it, but don't focus on it. Because of the fact that you can get that person ayin hara.
But does the ayin hara distinguish between ruchnius and gashmius? This is the...
No, so you see by the rub. The rub is rasha. Apparently not. Another example which is well known to us, which we have here on page 4, in the Hilchos Kriyas HaTorah, all the Gabbaim know that whenever there's a bar mitzvah in the shul, they have a challenge, because one challenge is that they have to give out aliyahs and in such a way that all the relatives are made happy, while at the same time not, you know, burdening everyone else in the shul with the undue care for the tzibura. But another consideration that takes place is that the gabbai has to make sure that a father and a son don't get consecutive aliyahs. Right? Then we have here in the Shulchan Aruch from Siman Kuf Nemal Sivvav, it says that essentially Yecholim Likros Beis Achim Zeach Azeb Aben Acharav, that really theoretically one would be allowed to call two brothers to aliyahs, you know, one after the other, or a son after a father. However, says the Shulchan Aruch, Bein Manichin Ela B'Shvil Ayin Har. But we don't allow this to take place because we are afraid that if you have a father and a son back to back, and people see the honor that's being bestowed on the father and then on the son consecutively, that this could result in an ayin hara, and therefore we refrain from such a practice. And the halacha is that you cannot give the consecutive aliyahs. The only time you could ever do this would be if you had two sifrei Torah. If you have two Sifrei Torah, so then, since there's going to be an interruption, in other words, if you wanted to give Shvi to, let's say, Shabbos Chanukah, which we just had a short while ago, so if you wanted to give the Shvi Aliyah to the last Aliyah in the first Torah to a father, and then give the son Master, that you could do because the Master Aliyah is in a separate Sefer Torah. So therefore, it was broken up, and that makes it that sort of, you know, people lose their focus. But even to give, this mistake is commonly made, that sometimes people think that even in one Torah you can do it, that since you say Kaddish in between Shvi and Maftir, so sometimes people think that you can give a father or a brother, whatever, you can give him the Shvi Aliyah, and then the next one, the Maftir Aliyah, that you cannot do. That you cannot do. It has to be with two Sifrei Torah. But the underlying reason that is for this halacha is because of Ayin Hara. Another example which comes to mind, there are others, but another one which comes to mind is the practice that we have that when Yizkor is recited in a shul, so people who don't need to say Yizkor exit from the shul. Right, there's always there's a pause, and then, you know, the people who don't have it are blessed that they don't have to say Yisra leave, and those that have to say Yisra stay behind and say it. So you ask yourself, why does that have to be? Why don't you just leave? It causes a delay. Why don't you just keep everyone there, and those who say it will say it, and those who won't, won't. So there are several reasons. This is not the only reason, but one of the reasons, probably the most famous reason, is because of the potential of the Ayin Hara, that a person who's saying Yisra, a person who had a loss, could look askance upon someone else and say, how come I had to undergo this and this person didn't? And that could cause the Ayin Hara effect, and as such, we tell people to leave. So these are just a few examples that are influenced in Halakha by the Ayin Hara. So now, so the question presents itself, so what can one do about this? So what can one do about the Ayin Hara? It's such a deadly and such a difficult thing to deal with that a person could be affected by an Ayin Hara. So what could we do for protection? So the truth is that the most common defense against Ayin Hara is not to get the red string, which we'll talk about in a minute. Contrary to, I don't want to, you know, hurt anyone's business but the best preventative measure against Ayin Hara is simply to live a modest life. If a person lives a modest life, then that is the best protection. It's better than 10 yards of red thread and all the amulets. You can go clean out the whole Judaica store from all their things, and it still won't be as good as the simple but difficult to implement approach that don't show up what you have. If a person has a good thing, so the whole world doesn't have to know about it. The whole world doesn't have to know about it. So Baruch Hashem, I know I have it, so I'm happy with what I have. It's very difficult because in the culture that we live in, the culture is very much into flaunting. You know, you have this, and this is success is determined by the house that you have and the car that you drive, and therefore people love to show, well, I've made it, look at this watch that I have on my wrist, and all kinds of, you know, you are what you drive, and all these other pearls of wisdom that we are told by the culture that we live in. The fact is that the attitude of Yad, the attitude of Yiddishkeit is that a person should not do that. That live modestly, that people don't have to see it. You can have it, no one says you can't have it, but enjoy it yourself, or take someone who you know can really enjoy what you have with you and show it to that person. Right? The common expression that people say, Bli Ayin Hara, or in Yiddish, Kein Ayin Hara, right, which gets somehow good. Kanahara, you know, that's how it somehow got corrupted, right? That expression in and of itself is not a defense. If you said that, now that's it, I warded off the people. That expression is an appeal to the person you're speaking to, that I'm telling you this, I want you to know I just got a great job, or I just, this happened, or I just got made a lot of money, or I just had a grandchild or a child or whatever, but please, so don't give me an Ayin Hara. I'm asking you, please enjoy it. Enjoy it with me. Right? This is by far the best protection against Ayin Hara. And this points also to the concept of tzniut in a different sense. In other words, the idea of tzniut, that today, because of the challenges in the way people dress, so therefore the focus is on tzniut, a one-dimensional tzniut. In other words, that you have to, tzniut means looking at you know, making sure that the garments of the person, particularly by women, that they're, you know, covered in the proper way. But there's a much bigger aspect to tzniut. The real tzniut, that's just the dimension of tzniut. The concept of Snail Lepers in Lokesa that the Navi said means that a person should be humble. And to be humble means that don't show it off. Don't say, you have it, good, enjoy it. It's God's blessing to you. So use it in a good way and don't bother other people with having to see it. And in a world where we have, especially in the Klal Yisrael, Baruch Hashem, you know, I mean, now the economy is difficult, but, you know, we've seen these extravagant celebrations of weddings, of our mitzvahs, or whatever, the bat mitzvah, or whatever it may be, and you say to yourself, is this really a good thing? is this really a good thing? Forget about the burden that it puts financially on people, but even for the people themselves who are doing it, why are you doing that? You're trying to show everybody what you have, but at the same time, you're incurring their anger, which is not a good thing. Finally, I would like to speak about, what about the other protections of Ayin Hara? Okay, the other protections of Ayin Hara, which are famous and easier to do than to live a modest life by anyone's definition, it would be to go get the red string, particularly from Kever Rachel. Those who remember back, the Kever Rachel red string, I think, is a relatively recent phenomenon, only the last 20 years or so. But they used to say in Yiddish, a rite of Bengal, that they would put something red on a child in particular, when there would be a bris or something, they would put something red. So what is there meaning to such a thing? So here, interestingly enough, there is a difference of opinion. So we have in the Dakar Tshuva, amazingly, one of the respected acronym from the 19th century who wrote an extensive commentary on Yeridea. So there's a section in Yeridea, a very small section, which deals with things that we don't do because it resembles witchcraft. It resembles, it's called the Torah for the Gemara called Dakeh Amori. Dakeh Amori, the ways of the Amorites. In other words, they were engaged in all kinds of superstitious and magical practices. And the Dakeh Tshuva says that, in his opinion, wearing a red thing is Dakeh Amori. This is what he says. However, we have in recent times, we have there was a Rav who passed away in the last generation, Rav Moshe Stern, the Avitina Rav, who wrote Svarim Shalos and Shuvos Ber Moshe, and he writes an amazing thing, and it's not on the sheet, but I'll quote it to you. Someone asked him, is there validity to the idea of putting a red string around a child, or the carriage, the baby carriage, or the crib of a child, when people, a newborn child? So he says, Kein Haya HaMinut. He says, well, all I can tell you is that this is a minut that goes back, this is a minute that's been practiced for a long time. But Kol Otsu came. He says, everyone did this. And he says further, the Kol Elu HaMin Hagim, Bichlau Minut Noshin Zekenos. He says, this goes into the category of what apparently, I never heard of this before, but he says, we have this, the old wives' tale. So he says, the old women, Minhagim, Shaleim Kotzav HaRajba, that the Rajba, one of the Gedolia Rishonim, writes, Sha'al Yizalzulu B'divreim U'B'Minhageim, that if you see that the women of Klal Yisrael engage in a certain practice, and that this practice has been passed down from generation to generation, you should not make fun of it. He says, "Kibavadai yisogosam bahare kodesh gam inelam hatan." He says, even if we can't understand how this could possibly help, but nevertheless, if it did pass from generation to generation, somebody somewhere must have had a reason for it, and therefore we shouldn't make fun of it. So therefore, we have to. On the one hand, we can use these things. On the other hand, discretion has to be used. If there is something that has been accepted to ward off the Ayin Hara, and I know among Sephardim there are more than there are among Ashkenazim for some reason weren't as concerned about these things, but I don't know for a good reason, but nevertheless. So amongst the Sephardim we find these various amulets, and you have these the hands with the five fingers and the name of Hashem written on it, and all kinds of different things that people hang up on their wall. Essentially, if there is a tradition that this has been used, meaning if it didn't just start now, in other words, if some entrepreneur came out for the holiday season, right, we have new improved ways to ward off the evil eye, so those types of things the person should stay away from, because of the fact that, not just that they probably won't help, but also it could be worse than that, because if there's no tradition for such a thing, then it gets into the question of engaging in practices of the Amori, Dakeh Amori. What are you practicing? Magic or superstition? What is this? We don't hold by these things. So if there's a tradition, if it's been established, so then, okay, this is what he says here, that if something's been handed down from generation to generation, you could say that that's the way it is, and that's fine. But if not, a person should definitely should stay away from it. So whatever it is, a person would go into the local Judaic outlet or the thread that comes from the Kever Rachel. I don't know why in particular it has to do with the Kever Rachel, or maybe someone here does know, but whatever the case may be, apparently that's been accepted. Apparently, I've never really heard people call it out in a big way. You know, maybe it's overemphasized. In other words, if you're going to go make an eye-popping celebration and tie a red string from Kever Rachel around your wrist, it's probably not going to help. In other words, all these things would help for a situation where you can't avoid it. In other words, I can't avoid it. I have a newborn child. I'm going to, my wife is going to be, going down the street pushing a baby stroller, and maybe someone will be envious. So what am I supposed to do? Lock the kid up in the house? I can't do that. So for that, these types of things help. But to go ahead and to flaunt what one has, whether it's wealth or whether it's talent or whatever it is, or brilliance, whatever it is, and to go ahead and to do that is not correct. And I would just close with the advice which is given in the Svarim. I think this is also in either Mr. Leor or a different sefer which I saw, where he says that really this could be seen from Yosef. In other words, because the analogy of that the brachos that were given to Yosef, the yigul or also karevahar, is that the fish are immune to ayin hara. Why? Because the water covers them. So there are infinite number of fish that exist, but nobody knows about it. You don't see it. You know, I mean, we know that it's true. We know that they're there, but you don't see it. That protects them, and that is essentially the protection that we have. And the other thing that the Gemara said, that Yosef was not interested in things that other people had, which is what kept him away from the wife of Potiphar. So we were also told that a person who is not envious of other people, that's also a protection against dying her. In other words, I'm not envious of them, so that somehow creates a push for me. When I see what somebody else has, I'm good with it, so that creates a protection that I should be protected against dying her. This is to the best of my ability, a presentation on a mystical topic, but it has relevance in our time, and at the very least, it hopefully will inspire a certain measure of modesty that we should be extra careful to prevent the dangers of dying heart.